Advertising your business with GCN is simple, effective,
and more affordable than you might think.
Visit advertise.gcnlive.com for more info. Take your business to the next level.
The gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
I won't go into, ladies and gentlemen, some of the problems we have with getting Gary Voorhees on the show because, you know, Skype's a little bit weird. And it's not like an alien creature visiting us from Alpha Centauri or Proxima Centauri. It is from the labs of Microsoft, which is what makes it weird. But Gary, we're glad to welcome you back here on the PowerCast. And we have a lot to discuss now because so many things have happened since the last time we talked. But before we do that, at all, were you acquainted with Tim Beckley?
Me?
Yeah.
No, I know of him, but I'm bad with names.
Yeah, Tim was a longtime UFO researcher. He got started like he was a teenager back around 1960 or so. I've known the guy for probably close to 60 years, which ages me. As I mentioned just very briefly on last week's episode of the PowerCast with Preston Dennett, Tim died in his sleep, although he had, you know, he wasn't in the greatest of health. And we're really sorry for his friends and his family. And probably we're going to invite some of his friends to remember him on a future episode. Rest in peace, Tim Beckley. Okay, Gary, we talked to you back in 2020. And as we get on the show right now, the world, I guess, has changed a little bit because every day or two, I'm seeing something positive about UFOs in the news media, on the cable news shows, all in anticipation of this Pentagon UAP task force. Have you been following all of that?
Yeah, I haven't had much of a choice. I've had about everybody and their brother asking about a billion questions, and my email and my phone's been blowing up ever since the 60 Minutes spot. And then, of course, once that happened, then everybody started looking into the fact that they're actually doing some type of soft disclosure soon. And then I've been getting calls from people that aren't even UFO people in my family and, you know, old friends and all over the place. So, yeah, it's blowing up.
It certainly is. You've suddenly become famous, which may not be what you wanted, but that's unfortunately what happens sometimes.
I don't know about famous, but maybe infamous.
Well, we can talk about that, but then they talk about me being something or other, but we didn't want to get into that. That's another story. In the meantime here, we had a long discussion there about your experiences, and we're hearing all aspects of it now. Have you been in touch with your fellow servicemen about what might have happened since then?
Yeah, I mean, I've been in close touch with Kevin Day and Jason Turner and, you know, those guys. And then I've got quite a few people that, you know, through one way or another, didn't want to be associated with, you know, the title of a UFO person, you know, that keep tabs on and apprised on the situation. And they want to be, they like to talk about things that happen, but they're not quite ready to come forward about things yet. But I hope, hopefully, after a lot of this stuff, maybe more people will.
Anything you learned about your experience here that would amplify what we talked about as we progress?
I'm not quite sure where in the story we were when last time I was on, but I know that I've been able to verify that it definitely wasn't the Princeton that would have gotten a lock on anything underwater, because we were running passive only at the time and we didn't have a tail in the water, meaning that we couldn't actually like triangulate any type of thing under the water if it was going underwater. And so the report of it being underwater had to have come from another ship. And the person that originally told me that seems to not really want to talk right now. So I don't really have any way of verifying that, but the more and more that I learn, and you know, with the pilots saying that they definitely saw something under the water, and you know, things like that, the more and more I think that it might have been true.
The underwater thing is what makes it so complicated. We see things in the sky, and as soon as they go in and out of the water, there's this flying flexibility that's so far beyond anything we could do.
I mean, just the normal flight characteristics of it, you know, were far beyond anything that we could do at the time or even now. So, I mean, it just factor in that it was transmedium, well, that was, yeah, that just blows it completely out of the water, you know, literally out of the water.
For those who didn't hear the first show, and I don't want to repeat old ground, but maybe a little bit, a wee bit, can you quickly summarize the original encounter?
In 2004, the USS Princeton and the USS Nimitz tracked several unknown aircraft for over 7 days, varying in numbers from hour to hour. After about a week, there was concerns of using that airspace for our training, so they did an interrogation. That interrogation then produced the Nimitz Tic Tac video that everybody gets to watch now. After that, then it went pretty dark for a number of years, and then in 2017, the New York Times did an article about the entire event, kind of solidifying it for some of us that it was actually a real thing, and maybe we should start talking about it. And since then, Kevin Day and I started a company to do research on, you know, UAPs and that type of thing. And we just keep moving forward from there.
Now, you had a Twitter account, which doesn't seem to be up anymore. Is that something you're not doing anymore?
A former member of UAPX actually was running that Twitter account and had decided that he wanted to go ahead and delete it rather than hand it back off to us. So we actually started a new one, and that's ran by Dave Altman.
Okay, we'll make sure we run a link to that. You know, we really want to know more about you. We know, of course, you have a small child because we saw the small child behind you in the brief excursion with your camera. And the child is now not contributing to the conversation, which we don't mind if they do sometimes, because sometimes we learn more from children than anyone else. But tell us about your background. What led you from where you started to here? How did you get involved in the kind of work you did?
It's just honestly curiosity and wanting to know why and how these things worked and why they, you know, why they were here, who they were, you know, what is their objectives, you know, is it man-made, is it not man-made? That's the other thing that, you know, I keep going back and forth on whether or not, you know, it's our technology, and it was just, you know, either, you know, been under wraps this whole time or not, but I mean, it's pretty damn advanced, which is what keeps me on the fence. You know, just juggling a regular 9-to-5 and family life, and then on top of that, you know, dealing with you know, running the UAPX company along with my team, and you know, it completely fascinates me to be able to get the type of people together that we have and be able to go and do the research that we're doing. And it's hopefully in the future going to be fruitful and be able to answer some questions, you know, because the Navy's got tons and tons of data on these things, you know, whether it's that they still don't know what it is or if they don't know, you know, and they just have a lot of this metadata on them, and so they still know more than us. You know, I want to be able to get that same metadata and give it to the public, you know, give it to other researchers, give it to other people to research, you know, peer review, make this a real science, you know, make this not a giggle factor anymore.
I'll stop a giggle factor and I'll break. Gary Voorhees joins us. Of course, he was one of the witnesses to that Tic Tac UFO encounter. He was aboard the Princeton. I'm going to ask him more about his military background, how he got aboard that ship? What led him on that path before he got involved in this strange world? More to come with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
If you feel America is facing more dangers than ever, you're right. Things are falling apart, it seems, every day. That's why you need to prepare for more of the unexpected, especially food shortages. When people panic, grocery stores run out of food fast. Would you survive without food for days, weeks, even months? The smart folks are buying emergency food now. Take a moment to shop MyPatriotSupply.com. We're America's leader in preparedness. With over a dozen years' experience, My Patriot Supply has earned over 40,000 four-star and five-star reviews. Our delicious, calorie-rich food averages 2,000 calories per day and lasts in storage up to 25 years, so it's there when you need it. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com, order a kit or two, and we'll ship quickly and discreetly to your door. Don't wait for something bad to happen again. Rather, be more self-reliant and prepared. Go to MyPatriotSupply.com. MyPatriotSupply.com.
Are you afraid to go to the mailbox because of letter after letter from the IRS? Are they stacking on more and more penalties and interest? By now, you know the problem won't go away on its own. Don't let the IRS chase you to your grave with penalties and interest and liens and levies. You need real help now. I'm Dan Pilla. I wrote the book on tax debt settlement, and I help thousands of people solve tax problems they thought couldn't be solved. I can help you too. Call 800-34-NO-TAX or go to my website, danpilla.com. That's danpilla.com. Danpilla.com.
Tahibo Tea Club's original Pure Pau D'Arco Super Tea comes from the only tree in the world that fungus doesn't grow on. As a result, it naturally has antifungal, anti-infection, antiviral, antibacterial, anti-inflammation, and anti-parasite properties. So the tea is great for healthy people because it helps build the immune system. And it can truly be miraculous for someone fighting a potentially life-threatening disease due to an infection, diabetes, or cancer. A one-pound package of tea is $34.95 plus shipping. To order, please visit shopsupertea.com. That's shop, S-H-O-P, super, S-U-P-E-R, T-T-E-A, .com. So the complete website is shopsupertea.com. Or call us at 818-984-6100 Monday through Saturday, 9 to 5 California time. That's shopsupertea.com at 818-984-6100.
Frustrated trying to get business capital? Want to take the slow process and rejection out of the equation? GCNLoans.com removes the slow, irritating approval process. Instead, get quick, simple funding. Powered by David Allen Capital, 80% of our pre-qualified clients are approved in days. Pre-qualify at GCNLoans.com and get your money this week. It's that easy. GCNLoans.com. That's GCNLoans.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Kind of wanted to understand more about you personally, Gary.
Okay.
What is the path that took you to where you were when this episode happened in 2004? What got you aboard that ship? What professional decisions?
when I was coming into the service, a lot of it was taken care of for me. You know, you go to the recruiter, you take your ASVAB, you either do good or bad on it, or mediocre. I happened to do very well on it, and placed in a high group and got into one of the more advanced rates, working on weapon systems and becoming a fire controlman. Enlisted, went into boot camp, went through boot camp, and then you had to go through a electronic school first, which they teach you all the basics of how to fix, maintain, and troubleshoot down to the component level on electronics. And then you go to an A school, which teaches you the basics of fire control systems, which would be basics on weapon systems for those that aren't real familiar with the terminology. And then from there, you go to a final school that gives you your specialization on the systems that you're going to run. And that final school was Aegis Computer C School, and that's to run all the mainframes that run all the different various aspects of the Aegis system, including the Spy 1 Bravo radar. Being that this ship was actually one of the older ships that hadn't been upgraded yet, they had sent me to this ship, and then pretty much as soon as I got to the ship, I had to throw away everything I knew because they had upgraded the ship to a new type of system that I had never been trained on. So kind of had to learn on the fly, did pretty well, had a lot of good people around me, and then I didn't. Then I was ended up being the only computer technician left on there because they were getting rid of the billet, and they had just brought on one of the what they called the Q70 technicians, which was just a nomenclature for denoting the new type of computer tech that was going to be coming out. It was just us. That's it. We had to run the entire weapon system for 10 months, but we did a really good job. We never had any downtime, and we then got back from our 10-month deployment and did everything, all the various jobs, and then started doing our workups and for the next deployment, and that's when the Nimitz encounter ended up happening. So that's the A to B, how I ended up on the ship and how I ended up being one of the sole people running everything when it comes to all the computer systems.
Now, that's an interesting thing, too, here. Did you notice any strange or unusual behavior of the computers when this was all going down?
No, actually, they were working excellent. They were working. There was no error codes. There was no, there's nothing to note that there was any problems whatsoever. And a lot of times when we have situations like this, we would only do, the things that we do just to verify that what we're seeing is actually what we're seeing. And, that would happen no matter what the situation was. So, any type of situation that's questionable, well, you take it down, you check it, and then you bring it back up. If it's all the same, guess what? It's there.
Had you ever seen anything unusual prior to this?
That's negative. No. Prior to this, I'd never had any type of UFO encounter. Never saw one personally, and we never tracked one on the ship, as far as I know. Radar operators might have more to say about that, but something like this tends to kind of travel amongst our group pretty quick, especially since I've got to be in the process of troubleshooting any issues that might come up. So I would probably be told pretty quickly if there was some type of thing that they need to verify. Now, I do know we get unknowns all the time, but if they don't stay and they're not trackable, then they're considered clutter. So generally the system will literally edit out garbage. You'll get it for a little bit of time, and then it just disappears and it's gone. But it'll be really fast when that happens, not over the course of days, and there wouldn't be continuous tracks like these were.
Had you had any prior interest in UFOs?
Well, watching the X-Files, that type of thing when I was a kid. I've always been interested in, just weird stuff, but nothing too out of the ordinary of normal kids, as far as I know.
After this happened, it's 2004. What happened to you next?
After this happened, pretty much when we pulled back into port, that was my last underway with the ship. I then got out of the service and ended up moving to Florida. And promptly, other than when, you know, drinking with some buddies, I really didn't talk about this event whatsoever because it was always kind of undetermined exactly what happened. And, you know, I was always curious about, you know, whether they knew what was going on by how kind of lackluster they reacted to it. Because everything, you know, I mean, other than the little snide jokes here and there and, you know, the, you know, running X-Files over the ship's TVs and stuff like that and alien movies, you know, other than that, you know, it really didn't feel like it was a big deal. So that's how we ended up just treating it until 2017. At least that's how I treated it.
Okay, when you went on to civilian life, any reason you didn't re-up in the military? Or is it just you did your time, you wanted to do something else?
Yeah, it was just time to get out. That was at the point in the career, in my career, where the advancement in my rate wasn't going very well for me, so it was just time to move on.
What kind of work do you do now?
I work for a telecom for Spectrum Communications. I do service work. Basically, I fix TV, cable, and internet.
So if I have a problem with my TV, you're the cable guy?
I am the cable guy.
Uh-oh, we're in trouble now. You are the cable guy. The people who you visit when you go to someone's home and their cable box won't boot or something, and you go in there, do they know who you are?
Most of the time, no. I've actually only been on, like, one mainstream TV show. So unless they were really into UFOs, they wouldn't really know me. I had one gentleman recognize me because he was very heavily into UFOs. And he kept eyeballing me the whole service call. And, you know, I go, "Are you okay, sir?" And he goes, "You look really familiar. Were you on TV?" And I go, "I mean, yeah, but I doubt that you would have seen it." And I go, he goes, "Something about UFOs?" I go, yep, that's me. He goes, "No way." You know, and it was kind of cool because he was a little geeked out by it. But we just sat there and talked UFOs for a while, and he was pretty happy.
And you fixed his TV?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Okay, that's good.
That's okay. The easy part of the day.
We get into the difficult stuff now. Gary Voorhees joins us, one of the witnesses to the infamous Tic Tac UFO by way of his binoculars. And we'll have more to talk about, especially now where we're having what might be a disclosure episode coming in the near future. With Gina Randall, you're in
The Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
Complement your health with hemp-derived cannabinoid oil. We've always believed that the closer to Earth, the better it is for our bodies. Our hemp-derived cannabinoid oil is phytocannabinoid-rich, full-spectrum, and organically grown. Finally, hemp made easy, clean, and effective. GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203. That's right, we cut through the red tape. It's now available at GCNHemp.com or call 877-878-4203.
USA Radio News with Dan Naraki.
Air travel continues its pandemic rebound as Americans are traveling in ever-increasing numbers. The Transportation Security Administration says it screened more than 2 million passengers on Friday, the first time in more than 15 months that passenger traffic has exceeded that 2 million mark. Even with the travel boost coming from mostly domestic leisure travel, Friday's numbers are still only three-quarters of the crowds that flew in 2019. But that surge is coming as new data shows that 13 states have reached their goal of having 70% of their adult populations at least partially vaccinated. President Biden has set a goal to get 70% of all Americans 18 and older partially vaccinated by July 4th. And one person has been arrested in connection with a shooting in Austin, Texas that left 14 people wounded, two of them in critical condition. Austin police say they had identified two male suspects in the shooting and are still searching for the second man. Police believe the shooting was a result of a dispute between the suspects. This is USA Radio News. The Department of Justice is investigating itself. Wendy King explains.
Lawmakers say they want answers after a new article showed that a Trump-era request for lawmakers' cell phone data was retrieved as the former administration sought out leaks during the Russia probe. The Justice Department's Inspector General is looking into the seizure of House Democrats' metadata during the Trump administration. Deputy Attorney General Lisa Monaco referred the case to the IG. Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and the chair of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Dick Durbin, say that former Attorneys General Bill Barr and Jeff Sessions must testify under oath to the committee. The demand came after revelations that the Trump administration had secretly gathered device data from Democratic members and staff of the House Intelligence Committee as they investigated internal leaks during the Russia probe. From the USA Radio News Pacific Northwest Bureau, I'm Wendy King.
And this is USA Radio News.
Get healthy, not high, with 100% pure CBD powerful natural pain relief from Veterans Vitality. GCN listeners, have you ever thought about how CBD may help you? I'm sure you have heard about the many benefits of CBD. Well, here's your opportunity to try before you buy. Created by veterans and for everyone who deserves better choices, our CBD is derived from organic hemp, grown in the USA, and third-party tested. Veterans Vitality CBD saves you as much as 25 to 50% over our competition, and a portion of all sales is contributed to veteran nonprofits and events. Many of our customers have experienced improved quality of life, help with anxiety, PTSD, and overall well-being. Our products do not contain THC. They are safe, non-addictive, effective, and 100% legal. GCN listeners, get your free trial bottle of premium CBD by simply paying shipping and handling at GCNFreeCBD.com. That's GCNFreeCBD.com. Again, GCNFreeCBD.com. Offered by Veterans Vitality Premium CBD.
This is Jacques Vallée. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
I know Randall is sitting there champing at the bit. He's got questions of Gary Voorhees, and I was trying to get a general picture of what this guy is like before we let Randall have at him. Randall?
Hey, Gary. Welcome back to the show.
Hey, how's it going? How you been?
Pretty good. Yeah, it was having you on last time. That was a really educational experience for a lot of people. And I think one of the best shows we'd had on this whole topic, especially to have somebody who was there firsthand when things were going down. And Gene just got us to give you the sort of the basic background, the bigger picture. And I would like to drill in just a little bit further into it with you. Again, maybe not quite as extensively as we did in the last episode or the last time that you were on, but because we all kind of know that this happened, but your situation was really quite unique in all of this and part of a larger picture. So when we're talking about the USS Princeton, that's the CG-59, I'm assuming, not the earlier ones from, you know, this is the sixth ship to carry the name. And
it's CG-59. Like on Rogo-class guided missile cruiser.
Right, exactly. Not the aircraft carrier earlier or any of that.
There's actually an account on the aircraft carrier, the Princeton, where they had a UFO encounter in the Philippines.
Oh, interesting.
Yeah,
there's tell us about it.
There was a... one of the guys in the company had posted a small written account in a book he was reading about the old Princeton had gotten basically been supposedly buzzed by a UFO.
So we'd be talking about the CVL-23, the aircraft carrier that was in, I think, was it World War II? I'm not sure.
I think so. I think it was the Gator freighter that was named the Princeton, which sounds about right. I'd have to look it back up, but yeah, it was one of the prior renditions of the Princeton. But we all thought it was kind of neat.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. But this one that you're on, much more modern, sixth ship to bear the name, and part of what is called a carrier group. If my understanding is correct on this, in other words, you're an integral part of a much larger group of ships that work together.
That's correct.
So give us a little bit more of an idea about the role that your ship plays in this larger group.
All right. So our primary duty is to play was to play what they call flight guard to the carrier. Now the carrier itself obviously is a military might with all of its its airplanes and its helicopters and its air superiority. But as for defense wise, it's relatively weak to defend itself. So our task is to guard the carrier and to run flight operations. Basically, we run shotgun with the carrier, meaning, side by side with them, keeping flank with them as they're doing flight, any type of flight missions or any type of things going on. And we're basically, it's hired muscle and it's communication system going back and forth, you know?
When you were on the show last time and we were talking about this, apparently, this was kind of an interesting thing that I found, that not all the ships were actively deployed out in the open sea. Try to forgive me if I don't get all the terms completely right, but apparently some of them were docked and you were able to do your exercises with them in dock.
Yep. That was due to the CEC system, which was prototyped on our ships. We were the first carrier group to have the system. And what it enabled them to do is basically turn on their comms with us, and they could be a part of the mission without having to be there, because they're getting all the data from us to provide a picture for them.
And this is where I just want to make sure alleviate any confusion. So the data that's coming in for you guys on this training exercise, it's real-time, real data from real systems. It's not something that's been put into the systems for you guys to react to, more like a game.
No, yeah, it's all real-time, and okay. The only actual data that anybody's seeing is the data that was coming from the actual ships that were there. The participants that were docked were, they would be seeing our data, but not actually contributing their own. Now, in a real-world situation where they were all present, then for 256 nautical miles from the back edge of every ship, we would have a huge circumference of data coming in, showing us the picture of everything around the battle group.
Okay, so there was nothing simulated in this, in other words, and that's really important because...
Yeah.
Your role in this is knowing about tracks that were being picked up that were unexplainable, and you first heard about these during a smoke break, and then you decided to start looking into it.
Yeah. We basically had gotten up when I didn't want to. I had a late watch and not in all that great of a mood, to be honest. And I was up there looking for a cigarette, and One of the guys that sits watch in the combat, come down and off, when he was coming off his watch, and we smoked a cigarette, and he started BSing with me about having unknown tracks all night, and how it's pretty odd, and we'll probably end up having to reset the systems later. And I'm like, all right, and then I was like, that is odd. So I went up there, and they weren't currently tracking them at the time, and then about an hour later they were. And so it was off and on for that entire week that we were tracking these things. So I started running passive diagnostics on the system. That's where you don't have to actually shut the systems down, but it's checking connections. It's making sure that there's no fault codes. It's making sure that there's, that everything's talking to each other properly. And then, of course, we have all kinds of systems. We have an entire section of ages devoted just to checking these things called ORTS. ORTS is basically an entire system of just checks and balances throughout the entire system that tells us what's wrong, when it's wrong, and how to fix it.
Give us some idea about the kind of space that this is you're talking about when you're dealing with this. Like, are you talking about a fairly large size room with lots of people, or smaller offices, or smaller areas that are designated to certain people? What's that like?
The Aegis system comprises up, I think it's like almost, probably almost a third of a ship. Because you got to remember, all of our systems comprise the weapon systems that run the entire ship. The only ones that are independent of us you have the Aegis system, you have VLS, Tomahawk, and all of those are integrated in with our systems to provide the eyes and ears for everything. And we provide the fire control solutions. Basically everything runs through the Aegis system. Aegis is kind of like the backbone of everything. I think the only independent system was the 5-inch 54 guns and the SeaWiz. And that was only because they have to operate autonomously. But everything else is tied into our systems. But the entire room, computer room, every computer for every system is in this room. It's a pretty large room, probably, I'd say, 30 by 10, maybe 30 by 20. So it's a pretty big room. And then we have associated rooms that we do maintenance on the backside of all those hexagonal plates that you see. That's Spy 1 radar. There's honestly a third of the ship is taken up with our equipment, from one space to another, voids, all the way down into engineering, where we have these huge cooling skids that just keep everything, because our systems were water cooled. So
yeah, we're talking some pretty high tech stuff here. So, okay, thanks. So this gives us like a situational awareness that is completely amazing. During the last show, you were saying that your group collects data from the rest of the ships as well.
Let's do a break. We got Gary, Gene, and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Do you need a website? Well, you can get a great deal on hosting services with Namecheap's legendary coupon code. They're offering substantial hosting discounts on shared hosting, business hosting, VPS hosting, reseller hosting, and even dedicated servers. Namecheap is preferred by millions. It's backed by a money-back guarantee. Use the coupon code LEGENDARY to cash in on the special deal at Namecheap.com, Namecheap.com.
First came Attack of the Rockoids, and it was a critically acclaimed success. And now there's The Coming of the Protectors. A former military intelligence man is contacted by a space woman in a dream. A dream that turns out to be a nightmare, because evil forces on her distant planet are planning to conquer the Earth. This is gripping science fiction of the classic kind. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors. Find out more at rockoids.com. That's rockoids, rockoids.com.
We've all seen and perhaps use the alcohol-based hand sanitizers. Have you noticed how it dries your skin, and as soon as the alcohol evaporates, it's no longer effective? GCNteam.com has alcohol-free antibacterial soap and foam, meeting or exceeding all requirements set forth by the United States Food and Drug Administration. Come to GCNteam.com, keyword antibacterial, or call 877-878-4203.
Silver has always been nature's very own antibiotic, and only one system allows you to generate an endless supply of natural silver solutions, SilverLungs.com. You'll find no wild claims or pseudoscience, just a lifetime of nano-sized pure silver solutions. The Silver Lungs generator allows you to make your own, so stop paying for silver solutions. The unique lung delivery system targets respiratory infections where other silver solutions simply cannot reach. See the Silver Lungs generator and lung delivery system at SilverLungs.com. That's SilverLungs.com.
First, we decide where we want to go. Then we need to know the best way to get there. Hi, my name's Adam Baratta. I'm the owner of Advantage Gold. We're the highest rated precious metals firm in the country. We teach people how to own physical gold and silver. Now, we've won the Best of TrustLink Award 4 years in a row because we educate our clients on how to buy gold and silver the right way. We don't pay celebrity spokespeople millions of dollars. We'd rather pass that value on to you. Call 800-900-8000 and speak with one of our experts. We'll send you a free gold kit along with my latest number one national best-selling book, The Great Devaluation. Call 800-900-8000. That's 800-900-8000. Get the best information, the best process, the best service, the best value. Call Advantage Gold at 800-900-8000. Call 800-900-8000.
Is your child defiant, independent, annoyingly inquisitive? After a long, hard day of following the rules, who wants to deal with troublesome kids? 49% of children suffer from oppositional defiant disorder, or ODD. Symptoms of ODD include independent thought, rampant creativity, and failure to submit to authority. But now there's a solution. The good people at Pilfer can help you with their time-release, once-daily capsule, Compliacin. Your child won't be able to form his own opinions, let alone express them. It maintains your child's ability to go to a state-run school and perform simple tasks around the house. You won't have to worry about parenting, and the school won't have to deal with your kid asking questions. Compliacin. You'll go from this. To this.
Good morning, Mother. I love going to school. And this week we're learning all about how the government is our federal family and they're here to help us.
Compliacin. Talk to your school psychiatrist and ask for it by name.
This is Micah Hanks of the Gray Alien Report, and you're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
So we're getting a picture here of Gary Voorhees' work environment, where he was when all this stuff was going down. Randall?
Right. So just before the break there, we were just saying that so your ship then can act, and sounds like it does act, as one of the primary nerve centers for all of the tracking information that's coming in from around all of the ships, and it puts it together on, I'm assuming, is it one large screen or several small screens, or how does that look?
That would be a little bit of a misnomer as us being the nerve center. That was the one strategic thing about CEC that was amazing, is that you didn't have every ship acted as their own individual nerve center. It was kind of more of like a collective rather than an individual. So all of this sensor data would be collectively shown on the big screens in combat and on specific consoles. Now, as far as I know, the newer versions of it, everything is just integrated into every screen. So if one ship, like say we got sunk for whatever reason, basically the only thing that would happen is just a small dip in the data, you know, where basically the data wouldn't go out as far. Yeah, so basically, CEC is what does that. It's all autonomous. It all works in tandem with each other, and there is no real nerve center for it.
Very interesting stuff. So all of the other ships are going to be getting all pretty much all the same data. They're going to be knowing what's going on as well. So since this incident happened, which was back in 2004, you were quiet about it for a number of years, and when Commander Fravor came out in 2017, you decided that you were going to come forward as well, and you are now president of UAP Expeditions and one of the founders, and have been investigating this in some further detail. Can you tell us now what was really going on with the other ships as well that you didn't know about at the time, and how all of this got started?
Well, I've heard some interesting stories over the years, people that actually saw firsthand, like that were on the carrier. They actually saw these ships get close to the carrier, where unfortunately, because of my shift schedule and the way I worked, I just must have never gotten lucky and saw them. And, you know, and then, of course, I've, accounted Mr. Sean Cahill's account where he actually saw five objects that came at the ship, you know, so.
Can you give us a sort of a timeline of how this happened? So, like, say, like, you know about how, what happened with you, but if you, have you pieced together this in more timeline with everybody in the bigger picture now that you've had a chance to do some more research with UAPX on this?
Most of our piecing together has mostly to do with Dave Beatty. He did some extensive interviews with quite a few people, and he's always been very, very kind to share that data with me and our company. My personal relationships with some of my other shipmates have gotten me other accounts where, you know, that have been able to add to the story and add to the information that we have to, you know, help us try to figure out what to look for, how to look for it, and what to do when we do get any information. And
okay, great. So let's just go through now like a brief sort of timeline then over the course of day one, day two, day three, leading up to when they sent the aircraft up to have a look at these things.
All right. So the first day was a little bit busy because we were, you know, trying to verify that these things were actual unknowns. We didn't have eyes in the sky that I was aware of, or I'm not aware of right now. And then, you know, most of the, we hadn't tasked any pilots to go look at it or anything like that. We were just tracking them. Then we, within the first day, we also took down the systems, checked them, brought them back up. Everything was still the same, still had the solid tracks. And then it got kind of talkative amongst us, but in you know, just kind of dull because they weren't doing anything. They were just floating southward towards Baja, doing 100 knots, doing literally nothing out of, like, there was no Orwell things or no crazy things like that. It was just pretty benign for probably about 5 days. And then somebody grabbed me and said, hey, they did an intercept. And, you know, I thought at the time it was live. So I'm up there and I'm pulling up this console as one of our top secret consoles to watch this intercept. And, you know, then I watched this object that they're, you know, intercepting, or at that time I thought was live, but it really wasn't. And it blew my mind. And then we watched it again. And it was like, I didn't know how to react to it. I'm like, that's what I think it is. How the hell can that do that? How can we not be concerned about this? You know, and then, like, I had a billion questions, but being junior, you just kind of keep your mouth shut.
Right. Yeah. So when you're talking about the intercept, then, are you talking about the first time that, when the aircraft were already in the air and they were told to check it out, or when they had landed and were sending someone else up?
This would have been when they sent somebody else up with the FLIR pod. You know, this is the film that the clip that you guys got to see was up from.
So you watched that live on your systems while that was taking place.
I was under the impression it was, but we're not certain that it actually was live. I don't know how to, I don't have a way of verifying whether it was live or not, because we can't, because the time frame at which we had the capabilities of going live is very, very, like, apparently the technology was there, but we don't know if the planes actually had it. So it might have been post-flight that I got to see it.
Was the quality of what you saw as bad as what we've seen in public?
Absolutely not. The quality was approximately twice as good as what you saw. Probably what you would say is standard definition, where what you guys got to see was compressed garbage.
I agree with the compressed garbage, but you see, this gives also skeptics the excuse to rip this apart, because they can say, well, it can be anything because it's not very clear. If I had the privilege of seeing what you could see, what could you tell me about the objects that we weren't sure about?
Well, the first thing is the shape. You'll be able to clearly define the shape. You'll be able to see the protrusions on the bottom that were spoke of, but not in a... It still wouldn't be as clear as, you know, anybody would really want, but at least you'll be able to define exactly what it was. You'll be able to tell its flight characteristics, the way it moved, and, you know, it was a much longer video, but there was a lot of just kind of it just tracking this object. Now, I mean, just seeing this object alone, seeing that it had a universal heat signature, that there were didn't seem to be engines, that it didn't have any flight surfaces, it had no windows, it had no wings, no propellers, no, you know, it had nothing other than just its shape. It was just mind-blowing that this thing could just be in the air, period. Even if this thing was only doing 100 knots, it would be like, well, how does it do 100 knots with nothing?
Right, yeah. Okay, can you... I'd like to back up just a little bit because I'm just wondering how it is that with your expertise in these systems, you can't know if you were watching a live situation or one that was being played back?
Because it wasn't my systems that was all filmed on.
You mean being displayed on at the time?
Yeah, so basically the systems, the link systems and the land and everything that it was being utilized to enable me to watch that video, none of that was my system.
You're just not familiar with that?
Yeah.
Okay.
I did find out that the link system at the time technically was capable of doing it, but whether or not we had the capability on that particular aircraft at the time, because it was pretty new, I haven't been able to verify yet. So,
okay.
So most likely I saw it post-flight rather than currently. And it was just
a playback.
Yeah.
For some sort of an analysis, then I'm assuming. And this took place on your ship to Princeton?
That's correct.
Okay, so if it was some kind of playback, there must have been a reason for that. Or do you know, it was just a situation where you just saw this happening and became a part of it, but you don't really know what was, you know, how that situation came to be?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure that it was probably put on there for a briefing, because it was on the secret land. So if, you know, somebody was preparing a briefing, they would have put it on there. And 9 times out of 10, they would have probably shot the link to somebody else and said, hey, check this out. And then that's how it ends up going across everybody that has access to those computers, you know.
We have more to come with Gary Voorhees. We're talking about what has become a really, really famous or infamous set of UFO or UAP encounters with Gene and Randall. You're in
the Paracast.
You are listening to GCN. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Hey, listeners. I want you to have the entire Paracast experience. So I'd like to tell you about After the Paracast. After the Paracast is an exclusive feature for subscribers to the Paracast Plus. With After the Paracast, you never know what's going to happen next. After the Paracast features color commentary, special interviews, and further conversations with Paracast guests. With Paracast Plus, you can download a very special enhanced version of the Paracast also. We do offer exclusive music, videos, and more features are coming. To get more info about subscribing, please visit theparacast.plus. Once again, theparacast.plus. Prices are just $1.50 a week, less than a cup of coffee at your local convenience store. Check out theparacast.plus to learn more about Paracast Plus.
Now, with orders to stay at home, public health concerns, the reality of illness due to pathogens and viruses, your health is at an all-time high risk. That's why it's critical to take a proactive approach to boost your immune system. You can with new nano-colloidal silver from Americare. Our patented process with tiny silver particles, 1/100th the size of a red blood cell, allows for maximum body absorption. Americare's nano-colloidal silver effectively disinfects your body internally, attacking pathogens and viruses while supercharging your immune system. Colloidal silver is antibacterial and antiviral. Simply put, it prohibits bacterial respiration, suffocating viral cells, preventing the virus from replicating. And now, due to public health concern, Americare is authorized to offer our lowest and best price ever, around $1 a day, but supplies are limited. Purchase nano-colloidal silver now at immunesupportnow.com. That's immunesupportnow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Supplies are limited.